Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back to the Command Zone podcast. I don't know.
I said I was ready. You said you were ready, and then that happened. I don't know.
It's funny. I don't think I've ever quite gotten used to being the person that starts.
Or being the number of the first
person. For like 180 episodes, it was Jimmy, and I've been doing it for the last however many, and I still am not used to it. Anyway, Command Zone Podcast, that's what this is, in case you didn't know. I'm Josh Lee Kwai, your host.
And I'm DJ. I'm also here.
So today is an interesting show. We're going to be talking about things Commander players need to stop doing.
This sounds similar to what we talked about last time, right? Just like things you shouldn't do, cards you shouldn't play.
True. This will have very little to do with cards. There might be some that have to do with cards, but it's more about like you're at a commander table and you see somebody do something, you're like, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, or I don't think that's a good thing that they like. I think that's a mistake they're making or whatever. But it's a thing that that's common.
I mean, we did come up with this list pretty easily off the top of our heads. Just rapid fire. Things that were just like, no, don't do that.
Don't do that. So this is a PSA to all Commander players, a list of things that all of us should stop doing. But before we get into that, we need to talk about our sponsors. If you head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone and order your Magic products, your singles, you know the holidays are coming up. If you've got gifts that you want to give to friends and family, that's a great place to pick them up. If you use the affiliate link, when you do it, you're getting gifts for your friends. You're getting them more into Magic or some other game probably, and you're simultaneously helping game nights, extra turns, this podcast stay on the air. That's what we call value. While you're there also, you can check out products by Ultra Pro or anywhere, your LGS, wherever you happen to be. Ultra Pro is making great things right now. We've been talking about it for a couple weeks here. They've got the Black Lotus themed stuff that's out now. It's this beautiful Black Lotus art. It's on playmats. It's on deck boxes, it's on sleeves, it's on a cloth wall scroll. You've probably seen that on game nights. Ultra Pro stuff is a great way to protect your stuff when it's on the battlefield and also make your room and your game room just look cooler. And the final way to support the show is directly by going to patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode. Are you ready for this one, dude?
I am.
Okay. And this episode is dedicated to Vilu Sepiharu, S-E-I-P-I-H-A-R-J-U. I think that's like Scandinavian or something, maybe?
Tell us in the comments.
Swedish?
I like the name.
Yeah. I've told my Icelandic.
Sepiharu?
Sepiharu. Is
you or
J is
you?
A you?
Sound? You or je, I mean, depends on what country.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. My Scandinavian's got to be one of the style of language has to be one of the hardest to pronounce stuff.
I don't know. One thing that's really cool is that you do have fans all over the world.
Jokelhops. That's the one that I can say. Is that Jokelhops? It's not Jokelhops, right?
Jokelhops. But okay. people say Jokelhops.
Okay. Well, Vilu, you rock.
You rock.
And I'm very sorry for butchering your name, but we did our best. Oh, I have a little note that says new game nights. So if you're watching this, a new game nights has dropped. We have Brian Kibler, Melissa DeTora, Ben Stark. That's two Hall of Famers.
And Josh.
And me. And well, if you want to see how I do in that murderer's row of competition there, then head on over to your YouTube channel and check out the new game nights. Okay, main topic. Things Commander players need to stop doing. Listen, there are exceptions to every rule. However, 99% of the time, if you find yourself doing something that's on this list we're about to talk about, you probably need to stop. It might be costing you games. It might be costing you fun. It might be costing you friends. So this is a PSA, again, to all Commander players out there. Number one. You ready?
I'm ready.
Stop giving extra turns with Expropriate.
Stop doing it.
Just don't do it. There's two choices. So Expropriate is 7 blue. It's a sorcery. The player who casts it gets to vote, and then each other player gets to vote. And for you either vote, what is it?
You get to vote extra turn or steal a thing.
Right. So if I'm the player that casts it, I always vote extra turn. So the player that casts it's always getting one extra turn because they can't steal a permanent from themselves.
Is it time or money, by the way?
I think it's time or money, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Then it goes to DJ. DJ's choice is give me another extra turn, or I get to steal one of his permanents of my choice. Then it goes to Mel. Mel has the same decision, and then it goes to Jimmy. Jimmy has the same decision. Now, here's what happens all the time, and it's very, very incorrect. I say extra turn because I cast it. It goes to DJ. He says extra turn. Mel says extra turn. And then Jimmy, it doesn't even matter what he says, but he probably says, steal my permanent, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You need to say steal my permanent every single time. Listen, it's going to look, you're going to look down at your board and be like, I really don't want him to have my whatever.
Doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't matter. Because they're already getting one extra turn. So whatever is on top of it, that second extra turn, you never beat the player that plays time stretch.
Extra turns are very powerful, and they're in multiple back-to-back ones are even more powerful than we assume. And so we might be mentally downplaying the power of multiple turns, but it's incredibly powerful, a huge advantage, and we have to be very cautious of giving time stretches or double time stretches.
The first extra turn is good. But you have to worry that there's somebody going directly after you, mm-hmm. so you can't just use a setup turn, right? You still have to maybe leave mana open for an answer or whatever. If you know you have two extra turns in a row, one entire turn just putting stuff out because you know, well, I'm going to untap with this stuff. Listen, here's the thing. If you give them one of your permanents, just the fact that they cast and resolved Expropriate means your chance to win the game went down a lot. That's just the facts of the matter, yes. Right? So now that's behind you now. That's happened, right? You can't go back and fix that part of it. So now the question that's in front of you, the dilemma that's in front of you, do I give them an extra turn or do I give them a permanent? The extra turn choice in that scenario gives them 10 times the amount chance to win the game than the permanent. Even though the permanent still probably has a good chance to give them, like them stealing your permanent still has a good chance to make them win the game because they are going to get the one extra turn with it. But the you're just trying to eke out any way you can still win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen games, and I literally used to say on the show I'd never lost a game where I cast Expropriate. I've lost one game where I cast Expropriate now. Mm. One ever.
How'd you screw that up, Josh?
And it was a time when everybody said, steal a permanent.
Okay. And that one extra turn wasn't enough to be able to overcome. Basically, what ends up happening, by the way, is that if you don't have enough turns to snowball your advantage and take over the game, you get one extra turn. Everyone looks at you and is like, yeah, you are very clearly the enemy and you can do something about it. And it's three people doing something about it. When you have multiple extra turns over and over and over again, a lot of times there's no coming back from that because there's just too many combat steps, too many cards, too much of everything.
Also think about this. In our format, if I take DJ out, anything that's his goes away. But if he gives me an extra turn, I still get it. Mm. So if I go and with my extra turn, I take one of the players out, well, I lose some of what I got. Unless I take everybody out all at once, which is possible, but it's not necessarily the most likely thing, right? Let's say I get an Ulamog and a Kozilek and an It That Betrays. That's awesome. I got one extra turn. So I go to that turn.
By the way, that It That Betrays changed the math a lot your thing.
Yeah. I don't think it really did, right? Because here's what happens. That's great. That's my turn. Now I'm going to get an extra turn. So I get one swing with all three of those creatures. Depending on where we're at in the game, there's a good chance, okay, I can take out one player.
Yeah, you take up one player. You're right. And then
one of them because one of them was that player's. And now it's somebody else's turn. And that situation, listen, you're behind if you're the other two players that didn't get knocked out. But you have a chance there.
Oh, you totally have a chance. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So every single time, give them the permanent. Don't care what you got on your board. Just give them the permanent because that'll be right 99% of the time.
I think it's a little bit like selfishness that comes in because it's my thing. I don't want to give them, but all of us have to suffer through your extra turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I'm the one that gets knocked out, but that still gives somebody else a chance to beat the Expropriate player. And maybe I'm not. So my best chance is give them the permanent.
Homeward Path. Only works for creatures, but it definitely limits their ability to take over a game with Expropriate.
You know, Counterspell is also good. Oh,
yeah, okay, fine. We're working from the premise that it is already resolved.
Okay, number two.
Number two. Guys, stop pulling out your phone.
Keep your phone in your pocket. Stop it. Yeah, be engaged with the game. Or don't play. It's totally fine if you don't want to play. Nobody's forcing you to play. But if you're going to play, pay attention. Be involved with the game. No scrolling through Facebook or, you know, I know the kids just all roll their eyes because no kids go to Facebook.
Seriously.
No scrolling through Snapchat.
No snapping.
Yeah. No No Twitter, no texting anybody.
Here's some times where I think it's appropriate to pull out your phone. And by the way, if you're engaging with the game state with your phone, like, I love it when people pull out a phone and like, I'm getting a picture of this.
Yep.
That sounds great. And if you're known in your playgroup for not pulling out your phone and you get a text message or something like that, like, people are going to give you the space when you do have to use your phone for something.
You can when it comes up like that, like, I'd be like, oh, hey, sorry, I got to answer this.
Yeah.
Just acknowledge it, but just like, do, and then
there are people that literally it's like pass and they're on their phone.
Yeah. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
I think that this actually brings up a really important aspect of Commander and Magic in general. It's that it's a complicated game. It's a social game, but it's a complicated game. Have you ever sat down, maybe at a GP or at a table or something like that? You're shuffling up and you're having like really good conversation. Like everything's going really well. And then suddenly you start playing Magic and it's like, yeah, I can't talk to you anymore. Like this is actually this happens at GPs every so often where it's like, I can't do multitask in this. And so one thing to know is that number one, it's okay for if you're having a conversation to be like, hang on, take your turn and let them take their turn and then pick the conversation back up again so that you facilitate conversation and also let the game go smoothly. Because also people don't want to do it. It's rude to be like, it's my turn, so you want to go, but also you want to finish answering the person. So just understanding that there's this dynamic that is hard to carry on conversation and a game of Magic at the same time. So just acknowledge it and be like, go ahead, take your turn. And then say, we were talking about blank. And then you pick the conversation back up again. Because one thing that sucks is just imagine Josh and I are having like a really great in-depth conversation about something and the game just stalls.
Yeah, and everybody else has to sit
there
too.
Then that means that two other people are sitting there going like, so, and then that's when they pull out their phone because they're left out. And so making sure that the game progresses nicely means that you avoid instant distractions, you engage in the game, and you acknowledge that this game requires some attention and you give some patience and give some understanding.
That's the worst part of people pulling out their phone is that inevitably it comes to their turn and they're like, okay, wait, what'd you play? And it's like, and now I'm repeating everything that happened for the person because they couldn't be bothered to pay attention. Like, it's not my job to keep track of what's going on in the game for you. And listen, I'll help people out that don't know cards and things that are paying attention. But somebody that's on their phone that's willfully ignoring stuff, come on. That's just disrespectful to everybody else at the table. Just pay attention so that you know what's going on. And that's going to make the games a lot more fun, too, because that person that pulled out the phone is inevitably going to play something and somebody's going to be like, that has hexproof because of this. Oh, okay, hold on. I'm not going to do that. Do something else. Well, if you do that, they've got this out here, so it's just going to come back in from the graveyard. Oh, I'm not going to do that. It's just, like, exhausting. So just don't be that person.
Yeah.
Okay.
These are good life lessons, by the way, Josh.
Be respectful of the people.
Yeah, like, if you're ever at, like, dinner or something like that, and it's like, sometimes when I'm engaging with other people, I really do want to pull out my phone in certain situations because, you know, there's other people to do it. My phone is comfy. I like, you know, I like my phone. I like to read about stuff. I get, like, nice comments from all of you, and it makes me feel good. But then I'm like, no, I'm going to leave my phone away. And even if other people have theirs, I'm going to actively try not to have it. And I'm going to try to break in the conversation. And
I'm going to be present. I'm going to be respectful. I'm going to be engaged.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to let you read this next one.
Okay. Is this a bad one?
Oh, no. It's just the one you put on the list. Yeah.
Stop relying on me to track all your stuff. Okay. Just because I brought a piece of paper to the game doesn't mean that I'm suddenly in charge of all the life totals. I'm in charge of your commander damage or your poison damage. Keep track of your own stuff.
Yeah, be prepared too, especially if your deck has Infect in it. You should be prepared to track poison damage because you're the one with the Infect stuff.
Do you track other people's commander damage in just the average game?
No.
I don't either.
I track mine and I hate tracking my own, but I will do it because I have to.
I only do it in some decks too.
Yeah.
Like if there's a chance of it happening, like then I'll admit to tracking it. And then some decks I'm like, no, I'm just not even going to.
There's some decks like my Vial Smasher Thrasios deck where I like early on, it's like, I have a two drop. It'll swing at you for one. And somebody's like, I took one for commander. I'm like, you don't even have to worry about it. It'll never matter.
If that person, here's the thing. If you want to track everything and be the person that's like, no, I like seeing everything. I like having it all up there.
Fine.
Totally fine. Do you know what's a great way for tracking everything where everyone can see it, Josh?
Yeah, if only there was an app for that. The Lifelinker app.
Oh my gosh.
You know, people still ask us all the time, what is the life tracking app that we use on game nights? And it's called Lifelinker. We developed it and it's free on iOS and Android. It's free to download, and the basic functionality is free. And for 99 cents, you can unlock the entire thing, which just gives you like colored backgrounds and some other stuff. Patrons of our show, they get a logo background. We are going to be working on getting Jumbo Commander backgrounds for Lifelinker, and it's very, very simple. And actually, we've seen people using it for other games now because it's just a very simple layout. There's no frills, no. It just counts up and down, and it will track commander damage.
Do you want to know the best thing about it? There's no ads that pop up in the middle of your game.
Nope.
Gosh.
No. And it will go up to 6 players, which I think a lot of apps, stop at 4. So if you have a larger game. But yes, I think you got to track your own stuff and you have to be prepared to do it.
Do you know what else helped a lot is that those clicky dice that come in the anthology sets? They're two little wheels, they go all the way up to 99.
But I'm trying to think of what it is. I like clicky dice.
Clicky commander dice wheels. So they goes all the way up to 99, and you can click them around. Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to adjust those, the spin down die is awful for our format, and I really don't like it at all. They roll excellently, which is
part of the problem.
Awful.
I actually will use like a 10-sided dice, one that has a 0, and then another dice that goes up to like even a 6-sided dice. So then you put a 4 and a 0 and use it that way. That's fine. Lifelinker's obviously the best. Piece of paper is fine too.
I just hate where I go around and I have a clicky die and I'm keeping track of myself, and I go around and I'm like, well, so what are you at? And they're like, well, I don't know. 40, I think. And you're like, I know you had a fetch land. Like, I can see it right. Oh, okay. You have a paint land on the battlefield. Did you ever tap that for?
Yeah, I got to sit here and like keep track of it all. Come on.
Just keep track. Okay.
All right. Number 4. Stop being tempted by the tempt spells.
Josh, why are you sharing this? I love playing Tempt with Discovery and Tempt with Vengeance. I love these spells because people don't know how to play them.
So Tempt with Discovery is the one you see the most, and this is a spell. It costs 3 and a green.
Yep.
And it says you can search your library for a land and put it onto the battlefield, any land. However, each of your opponents can then choose if they want to search their library for a land and put it onto the battlefield. And for each one of them that does, you get to search your library for an additional land and put it onto the battlefield. So if I play it and DJ, Mel, and Jimmy all say, yeah, I'll search for a land, then I get 4 lands and they each get 1. Never, ever,
it's so
ever.
Good. Well,
I'm going to talk about the exception after this. But
I know the exception. But yeah.
Basically never, ever do this. Tempt with Vengeance is the one that creates tokens.
Yep, 1/1 elementals with haste.
So let's say I create 5, somebody else could create 5, and then I get 10. If they all get 5, then I get, 20?
20.
Yeah.
And then you could basically swing and kill one person.
Yeah.
That's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power. All the tempt spells are pretty bad if nobody is tempted. Like 3 and a green, go find a land out of your library.
It's very
not
mediocre.
Very good.
Yeah, especially if you can pay 1 more and
you can
get 2 lands.
You could be the same. Explosive Vegetation and Sky Shard Claim.
They don't get everything, though.
No, I'm just saying. They get.
But like a direct comparison is Hour of Promise.
Yes.
5 mana, get 2 lands.
Yep. And most of the time, Cabal Coffers, Urborg, that kind of stuff are 2 lands. And so they really want to get that second one. And
exactly.
The third and the fourth one don't help them as much, necessarily. Sometimes they just want to get Guy's Cradle or whatever. But
yeah.
That spell's horribly inefficient to go find 1 land. So you're kind of punishing them by not being tempted. There is the exception to the rule, and I'll tell it to you right now. And this is only if you can get the table to agree with it, or you can do it by yourself if you can tell the table what you're doing. With the Tempt with Discovery, the best play I've found, and I was taught this one time when somebody cast it. I think it was at a GP. Oh, it might have been in a play group I played with in San Diego. Anyway, the person cast it, and I was like, no one's going to be tempted, right? I was trying to convince the table. And one guy's like, actually, if we all go agree to go find a land, but we all go get strip mine, they're going to get their 4th best choice.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that is brilliant. I'm in. I'm going to go get strip mine. And so what happened is the person who was casting the tempt, they couldn't even go get the cards they wanted to. Because if they go get Cabal Coffers, Urborg, something, something, well, what are we going to destroy with strip mine? Cabal Coffers and Urborg are the first to go.
Yeah.
So they were like, crap, I'll just go get 3 like regular lands, I guess. And they put those out on the table. And then we were like, strip 3 of them, you only get 1. You know, and we didn't even strip the lands they got, I think, because they already had like a, you know, like a bayou or something in play. We'll take that away, blah, blah, blah. And so that if you can get the table to agree to go get strip mine or wasteland, if you have those,
That's powerful.
And punish the player. Then you can actually punish the player that cast Tempest Discovery.
If you can do it without having that table conversation, if let's say that Josh and I give each other the look.
Yep.
And then it just happens. Then the person will think they got it all won, will play the Urborg in the Cabal Coffers, won't even search for those bad those random lands. And then you get to just take out all the great lands out of their deck.
Boom, boom. Okay. Important safety tip. If they're playing Gitrog Monster.
Oh, yeah.
Omnath, Titania, Lord Windgrace. Don't do that. Just that.
Just
that
don't be tempted.
That plan won't work. You got to fall back on the don't be tempted plan. Okay. Number 5.
All right. This is one that bothers me more than it should. Okay. Stop rolling dice to decide who to attack. Oh, It drives me crazy. Okay. The reason why is that I think that you should do everything with consciousness. You don't just go in and say, oh, I'm playing this game haphazardly and I'm not even thinking about anything. I'm going to let fate decide for me. No, you have information in front of you. You know Josh is a good player. Attack him. You can look at the commanders and see.
He's politicking now.
Yeah, you can look at the commanders and see which one is powerful. You can see who has more land drops. You know who went first. Make the right call. Attack the right person. Threat assessment always.
I mean, the big argument I would say, and something that maybe changes my mind, because I have rolled dice for who attacks before, it depends on the group. If I think that's actually going to deflect blame based on who I'm playing with, then rolling the dice is worth it for me, in that if they're not going to hold me accountable for that, you know, if that actually works.
Yeah, you're right.
I guess we got to rewind here.
Follow up. Don't let people deflect blame for rolling dice.
Yeah, I want to explain that that idea, because maybe not everybody understands it. So a lot of the reason that you roll dice, or that a player rolls dice to decide who they're going to attack, and by this we mean when somebody goes, it's usually early in the game.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, let's say my Vile Smasher deck, it's a 3-drop, and a lot of times when I play it, I look around and nobody's got a creature because they just played Mana Rocks and Cultivates and stuff, and I can attack any player with it. The problem is, in Commander, being aggressive usually punishes you. It creates a grudge in somebody's head where they're going to pay you back or whatever, and players actually want to uphold that kind of reputation that you can't do things to them, because it strengthens them later, right? Mm-hmm. It's a precedent that they're setting. And so one of the counter moves to that a lot of times is, like, I'm just going to roll the dice, and whatever the dice say, that's who's going to attack. And so it's taking my responsibility out of it,
but that's a trick, because you are still the one choosing to roll dice, choosing
right.
to make it random.
Right, yeah. But you're covering it in a layer of obfuscation so that
yeah.
the person that gets hit will just be like, okay, it was the dice or whatever.
And some people will say,
yeah,
it was just the dice, it doesn't matter, and totally leave Josh out of it.
Yeah, and that's why people roll the dice. And so there is an upside to doing that. Now, the counter to that is not allowing the person to get away with it and still holding the grudge or paying them back later or whatever. Here's the other thing I would say is, recently, because of all the data that we did in the data series, we know there's a bunch of factors that actually give people advantages, and we need to even out those factors. And one of the ways is aiming chip damage their way.
Yeah.
And so if somebody got an early soul ring, or somebody went first, or somebody is not playing white, things like that. Somebody has the most lands.
Plays an expensive deck, an expensive card.
Doesn't you know? Or has the most lands in play should probably be the number one thing
yeah.
that you start going after. Also could be like the most cards in hand. That was something we weren't able to track, just because it's hard to tell how many cards people have in a lot of these videos, but I would assume has some kind of advantage. You can choose a number of those factors and get in at the player. And maybe even if you say that, I'm going to attack you because you have the most lands, that might have the benefit of getting the other two players to be
exactly.
like, I'm going to attack you because you have the most lands, or I'm going to attack you because you went first. Verbalizing that may actually get everybody to team up against that player and bring them back down to a normal level, or even below where they're disadvantaged. And so I do kind of agree that the rolling of the dice, it takes away your ability to make a game evening the playing field play, if that makes sense.
Oh, I totally agree. I don't like it when also people just let them accept that. They're like, oh, okay. If it's also, by the way, if it's not advantageous for you to attack, you know, Josh might, in his Vile Smasher deck, be like, look, a damage in with Thrasios is not worth having anyone's eyes on me at all.
Yeah.
I think it's totally okay for him to just say, nope, don't tax, keep going.
Yep, yep.
I have one other exception.
Okay.
Ruhan of the Fomori.
who has to attack an opponent at random. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll tell Wedgie said that. All right. Number six. This one's mine. Stop agreeing to the first offer. So we talk about politics all the time on the show. And a big part of politics in EDH is the offering of deals and alliances. I'm not talking about the person offering the deal here. I'm talking the person getting offered the deal. I see this way too much, and it should basically never happen, where somebody turns and goes, DJ, if you don't attack me next turn, I won't kill that thing.
And I'm like, all right. Because I'm most of the time, it's because you're okay with that situation.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to be just okay with the situation. You're trying to get as much value as possible in order to give you the best possibility of winning the game.
Anybody who teaches you about negotiations will tell you that if they've come to you and made the offer, they're not offering you the most they're willing to give. They want the thing that they're asking you for more than you want it. Otherwise, you would be coming to them. So anytime anyone approaches you with a deal, it's incumbent upon you to get the most you can, and it's always going to be more than what they offered, which means you should always counter.
Be like, yeah, I won't attack you, but then you can't also attack me next turn.
Yeah, or you have to attack that person or something.
I like that a lot, where it's like you have to aim stuff on the other person.
Yes, get something. Get something additional. Don't just take what was offered. I guarantee you that 99% of the time, they will give it because they really must want what it is they're asking for because they started from nothing. It's not like you were talking about it before. They usually will turn to you and just straight up be like, don't attack me. Well, what do I get? This. No, I want this and that. And most of the time they'll be like, okay.
So Josh, do you think that this makes the games like last a little bit longer, makes like the politics a little bit more contentious?
Maybe, but that can be in your advantage.
I do think it is in your advantage, like 100%. That's just how negotiation works.
Well, and there's a great line in negotiation, which is if they haven't said no, then you haven't asked for enough.
Ooh,
that's just a great line. And then this is another great life lesson. I don't care what you're negotiating. That's a really good sort of baseline to think about. I don't think it makes the game extremely longer, right? Because you go, Josh, don't attack me and I won't kill that thing. And I go, how about you don't kill that thing and also you don't attack me on your next turn? Okay, deal. That doesn't take a lot longer.
Yeah, I agree.
Now,
if
we start haggling a lot.
Yeah, then the other players are like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, just attack me if you just move the turn on.
But you can also use that too. So if people start taking a long time, I will often be like, I'm just going to try and kill you as hard as possible because you're wasting my time now. There you go. That's politics in action too.
One thing that's a premise of going into this negotiation is that we are actually at this opposite negotiation table. Sometimes we might have an alliance going already, and this doesn't necessarily need to be a back and forth. We could be starting from a position of friendship where we're like, okay, that's like we are kind of working together.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Always just get as much as you can though. And let me tell you, if they came to you, they're always willing to give more. Always. Okay.
Okay.
Number seven.
Okay. Stop cutting lands from your deck. Now,
I do this sometimes, yeah.
Everyone does it. I do it too. But it's a natural thing, but stop cutting lands. And actually, there's a reason why I care about that. Okay. Number one, I care about all of you. I do. I care that you guys have great play experiences. I love y'all. Okay.
Help me help you.
Exactly. And you will have less of a great play experience when you cut lands. But also another thing that I've seen you do this as well, but a lot of times if someone starts mulliganing down, I'm just like, drop to seven. I want a good game. I don't want you to mulligan into oblivion and then, you know, the game doesn't work and you're just completely out of the game. I don't want that at all. But the problem is that if you are cutting lands from your deck, you deserve that.
It's your fault, and I'm enabling you.
It's your fault. So if you're down to like 32 lands, and I'm always saying, oh, it's okay, go up to seven, then you're not being punished for your bad decisions.
Have you ever noticed, this happens to me, where like a new set comes out, it's been a year, you've updated your deck a few times. I bet if you've done that over the course of like a year or a year and a half, and you were to go back and count the lands in your deck, it's like, Oh man, there's only 34 lands in here.
Oh no.
Because like you're like, oh, Assassin's Trophy. That's awesome. I need to put that in this deck. And you're going through and you're like, what do I take out? What do I take out? What do I take out? I'm just gonna lose a forest. Put it in. Don't think about it. Then the next set comes out and that happens. And you don't do it every time, but over the course of a certain amount of time, you know, I've definitely gone in and counted lands and decks. I'm like, geez, this is down to 33 lands.
And when you're tinkering, do you ever go like, you know what? I really want to add that forest back in.
No, you never add one back in. And so, yeah, you got to go, you got to be aware, like, I've probably done this. I need to go look at the deck and I need to find two or three cards to pull out. And I need to get that land count up to 36 to 38. We just learned that that's one of the most important things in the entire format is just keeping up with the amount of mana that people have. Having the most lands in play is a huge indicator of if you're going to win, because that's just going to allow you to deploy your resources. So stop cutting lands from your deck.
Stop it.
Okay. Number 8. I didn't even call you out on that one.
I know. It's okay.
All right. Stop making everyone watch you search. Crack that fetch land or that tutor on your turn. The marginal advantage just ain't worth it.
I think we've talked about this. I think a lot of people get this, but I still see it.
The fetch land thing is perplexing. A lot of people, it's like, I know, that's what...
Do you think you're coming from Modern? Because by the way, it doesn't even matter in Legacy either.
LSV would tell you to do, right? Don't give up any information. Do it. Crack that fetch land on the end step before your turn. But seriously, the advantage is so minimal. You're probably not playing for anything. All the time, I'm like, play Wooded Foothills. I'm going to crack it for something. Go ahead. And while everyone else is going, I'm going to search and find the land that I want. I'm not going to do it on the end step before my turn so that they don't know, oh my gosh, did he get a mountain or a forest? Or did he get a dual land?
Do you know what we should do? We should start playing like Shadow of Doubt and other things that say you can't search your library at instant speed, or like Nimble Obstructionist, and just punish those people.
Aven Mind Sensor.
Yeah, that make you wait. Just be like, you know what? This is not for you, but now it is. Shadow of Doubt.
and honestly, like Enlightened Tutoring and stuff, if you've watched Extra Turns, we did this. We can't really show it on game nights, just the way that it's cut. But like very often, you and I both will do things like this, and Jimmy does it, our entire playgroup does it, which is play Enlightened Tutor on my turn and just say, I'm going to cast this on the end step before my turn, but I'm going to search now. And so if something weird happens in between now and then, I might change what I'm...
Mill, or, and by the way, like mill doesn't hit it, or like something else doesn't hit it. You'll just mill off the top anyways, because we all know how it works. There's a unspoken understanding that you're doing this at the exact right time that you're supposed to do it. We trust that you know how this works.
Yeah. At GPs and things, you'll often see people that just wait until the end step before their turn to play their Vampiric Tutor, and it's just like...
Might be in an unfamiliar playgroup. That might be fine. They don't want to be punished. They don't want to. So you default to the exact right way you should do it. But try to encourage people to be like, no, it's okay. And if they try to do this, they're not trying to cheat. They're trying to speed it up and do something favor for you.
I mean, at the GP, I'll say I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to play my Enlightened Tutor, but I'm going to do it on the end step of her turn before my turn. But I'm just going to search now to save us time. Is that cool? If they say no, fine. Then they want to wait. If they say that's fun, you know.
And a lot of times it's like they say it might not be cool, or they look at you like they're confused just because they don't know that this is a thing that people that play a lot with these effects do.
Yeah, it's so much better, because if you're ever looking through your library for a card, whether it's a land or anything else that you tutored for, and no one else is doing anything, you screwed up.
Yeah.
Something like that's not necessarily true. Sometimes Demonic Tutor is a sorcery.
Well, and also like you
sometimes
need to
sorceries
use the land.
Are on your turn.
You'll even say, and hopefully you know your deck enough that you crack it. You're like, okay, crack it for a Bayou. Or you just say what it is and you just go, and like you don't even get the land yet.
Oh,
and then you do your turn, and then you're like, okay, pass. And then you pick up your library and you find that land you need. Sometimes you don't even have it. Like you're like, wasn't there a time where you said crack for a Bayou and you're like, turn later, I don't even have a Bayou in this deck.
It's an overgrown tomb, and then that was on extra turns. Yeah, that's what we do a lot, right? Play Wooded Foothills, crack it. Say I'm gonna go find a taiga.
You could even say untapped green.
Yeah, I'm gonna find an untapped green source, and I'm gonna tap it, and I'm gonna cast this card. Go ahead, and I haven't even searched my library yet, and they're like, yeah, fine. And then if it happened to be a shock land, you just take the two extra damage.
Yeah.
But they don't want to have to sit there and watch you search because it's just a waste of time for everybody. So stop making people watch you search.
Okay. Here's one that kind of bothers me. Stop scamming the priority system. And I actually think that a lot of these are just like, hey, your play experience could be better. I actually think this one's a little bit manipulative. This one's like a little bit bad. Yeah, it can be a little bit scummy. So let me explain what's going on. So we're at a four-player.
Explain how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. We're at a four-player commander table. Josh plays a spell.
Expropriate.
What's supposed to happen is that priority goes to me.
It goes clockwise around the table in turn order.
Exactly. And I have a chance to react to the expropriate. And then I can pass my priority to Mel.
So DJ goes, I don't have a counter spell. I can't do anything. I pass priority.
Yep. Then Mel says, I don't have anything. And then passes priority to Jimmy.
Jimmy goes, force of will. And I go, crap.
And we're all like, whew. Okay.
That's how it's supposed to work. That's technically how priority passing goes. Anytime anything happens that can be responded to, that's how it goes.
And CEDH knows this, and they pay very close attention to verbalizing passing priority because resources are very important. And if you play more competitive Magic, like, you pay very attention to who has priority.
In competitive Magic that's not EDH, though, it's 1v1. So
exactly. You know it's going back and forth. Yeah.
I have a counter spell, but if DJ goes first, I'm not going to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But in casual Commander, we shortcut it in a lot of ways.
And some people abuse that shortcut.
Right. That's the thing here.
So here's the situation
shortcut
that happens.
It's not don't shortcut.
Yeah.
This is don't abuse the shortcutting.
Exactly. So here's the situation that happens now. I have a counter spell. And so I never say pass priority. I just wait.
Yes.
And I wait for, I just kind of look around and I wait. And then I hope that Mel or Jimmy uses their threat against Josh beforehand. And then if Josh is like, sweet, I vote time, I'm like, oh, wait. And then I play my counterspell.
Yeah.
So I slow roll my interaction, hoping that one of my opponents steps in front of me. It's okay to be like, I'm not sure, hang on a second, and hold them. But don't do that. Don't like abuse the priority system.
If you're the first player to act, the first player that's going to have the chance to respond, and you have the ability to stop it, and you're thinking in my head, I'm going to stop it if no one else does, you kind of have to at that point.
Yeah.
You just got to know. You can't go, are you guys going to stop? I guess
you can hold priority. You can say, hang on a second. Do you guys have anything? Are you guys going to stop it? Like,
yes, you can do the political part of it.
Exactly.
But what you shouldn't do is like,
what people do is they just don't say anything.
They just sit there and they look at the other players like, are you going to do something? And then when they're clearly not going to, then they'll use it, but only if they have to. Yeah. Sometimes, and this is totally fine too. This happened on Game Nights once in the Guilds of Ravnica episode where I was going to respond, but Adam got so excited, he just said, in response, I'm going to do this. If somebody jumps it like super fast, like let's say I said, I cast Expropriate. And DJ is, you know, has the counterspell in hand and is going to be like, should I counter it, guys? But Jimmy just gets excited and goes, I force of will it. Like, before I've even really... Then that's not DJ's fault.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I know that's going to happen now, so I can let it happen.
Yeah.
It's a little bit fuzzy, but you know when people are trying to scam the priority system. Because what sucks is when you feel somebody's doing that, and then you have to enforce priority how it's supposed to happen. And then the game just grinds because you're like, do something. Priority, priority, priority. It happens? Okay. Do something else. Priority, priority. I go to combat. Priority. Nobody wants to play that way. So don't be the guy or the girl that's trying to scam that system. Just do it in good faith. Do it in goodwill. Do it how it's supposed to happen. And the people that are scamming it, they know how priority works.
Exactly.
They clearly do. Otherwise, they couldn't scam it. It's the people that...
Maybe they don't. Maybe they're just like...
Oh, that's true.
Maybe they're just like, it's multiplayer and I'm gonna wait, and they think it's okay to jump in. But... people that know how priority works are like, no, it's not how it works.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Number 9. No, that was number 9. Oh, we're on number 10.
Yeah, this is the last one.
We're at the end of the list. All right. This is the only house rule that I've ever called for when we've played.
You don't enforce it, though.
I know, but I tell people and I hope they'll be good about it. All right. Number 10 is stop scooping at instant speed.
Don't I have the ability to pick up my cards whenever I want, Josh?
You certainly do. And I have the ability to not call you the next time that we're playing. Listen, it's this. I'm talking in instances where you're you're basically scooping, you're basically conceding the game to deny advantage to a player.
Yeah.
I don't usually say this. I have said, hey, listen, we're only scooping at sorcery speed. Now, I don't enforce it because it's hard. If somebody's like, my wife called, I'm going to scoop. You can't tell them no.
Well, and also that's not really messing up the game very much. I think that one place where I've seen this is, you remember when Anala came out, they have the Wander Wine Prophets combo.
Yes.
And people loved the ability to get infinite turns and infinite combats with Wander Wine Prophets and Anala. And it's a complicated combo, so I'm not going to explain it here. But basically it relies on hitting the person.
You have to deal combat damage.
You have to deal combat damage to them. And so at any point in time, I can say I attack Josh. And then you're like, before damage, I'm just going to scoop. And then my combo fizzles.
Yeah.
And I could have had the win. In many cases, you do have the win. And then I just suddenly don't now because you decided to scoop. Now, is that strategic? It's technically within the rules of the game.
Yeah,
I don't like it, though.
Yeah, it feels scummy again. This, to me, feels like gaming the system. It feels outside the game to me. Quitting to deny the opponent. Sometimes somebody has like a big life linker, like they're going to get infinite life.
That's a thing too,
I've seen people try to concede. Well, I'm going to concede so you don't gain the life. Conceding to deny an opponent an advantage to me is pretty scummy. Like it's just not the way the game's meant to be played. Multiplayer is meant to be played because they should get the advantages that they work for. And they should be able to then leverage those against the other players. That's how the game works. I don't want to be making moves going, well, if they just concede on the spot, then I don't get my effect.
And that sucks because that gives you an advantage. Yeah. Knowing that you're the person that concedes gives you a little bit of an edge because I'm going to use my Wander Wine Prophets combo on everyone except for you last.
Right. Yeah.
You were about to say Mindslaver.
Mindslaver falls in this category because, and I forgot to mention this last episode, but like if they Mindslaver one player, it's like if you concede in response to that, you're taking advantage away from that player, right? They were going to be able to use your turn against the other players. Another reason I don't like Mindslaver because I was saying how I don't like to concede to it. That's one of the reasons.
Well, and also like they can do it even if you have infinite Mindslaver, like they could theoretically do it at your end step. Be like, all right, your cleanup or your end step where you can't cast it at sorcery speed or do any of your extra stuff. I'll just concede. And then suddenly you lose the turn you stole, and then it just jumps over to the next player.
Yeah, I just don't like this at all. Definitely I give people breaks, and we all should. In our playgroup, it's happened where somebody's frustrated and they do that and whatever. And it's not like I'm not going to call them for the next game night. But if somebody was doing it all the time, I think I really would consider being like, I'm not going to play with that person anymore because they're not willing to give me the advantage that I've earned. I'm playing the cards and sequencing everything in a way, and I don't want to have to factor in, are they going to just quit?
I'm wondering if that's the type of player that gets tilted.
Yeah, I think it's related.
It's a little bit related to someone that gets kind of frazzled when they lose. And that could be another thing that stems out of this. It's like, be a gracious winner. It's fun. If you win and you're like, great job, that's fun. You shuffle up and you play another game. If you're like, can't believe you did that. I'm going to type something in MTGO to your face. That was great top decks.
Yeah. I wish I could be so lucky.
Yeah.
Now we're all on an MTGO chat.
You know, if I had,
you're scarred.
If I had
scarred.
These three cards in my from my deck in my hand,
who
you would have lost.
Who plays with X card, scrub? Scoop at sorcery speed only. That's a good house rule, too. And like I say, I don't enforce it, but we do try and say it at the beginning.
But you might actually enforce it on yourself.
I definitely enforce it on myself. I've never once done that.
And scooping to sort of deny other people or king make kind of thing is like a little bit like, you know what? Sometimes if they're taking it out, they deserve to be the king because they've reached that advantage.
I don't mind king making, and that's the sort of last death throw, like last punch or stab you can throw out before you go.
I'm totally okay with that because just like you should get your advantage by killing me, you should also take on the risk that I can just go and stab you one more time before I die. I like that.
Before I go, I can swords and fork it and take out your two best things.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Because that's what you deserve. Now I'm going to die, but you weren't in such a commanding position that you could take me out without incurring.
I think that's the other side of the coin, basically, where it's like, okay, like if you deserve the advantage you get from killing someone without instant
scooping, you deserve the disadvantage.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Those are the top 10 things commander players need to stop doing to the listeners. What is something you see commander players do all the time that you think they should stop doing that we didn't mention on this episode?
Yeah. Feel free to leave it anonymously so you don't have to like make everyone in your playgroup upset at you. Yeah.
What?
You're going to go to, this is going to cause trouble,
it's the
Josh.
Internet. They already feel free people to do everything
gonna,
anonymously.
People are going to come to playgroups and they're going to be like, stop it. Stop it right now.
That was bugging me, the paper on the table back there.
That was me. I did that. That was my throw.
It made it off this table, but actually that was a trick shot. You landed on the table without, yeah.
I mean.
I'm impressed. Something else I'm impressed with, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You know, we get messages constantly with people saying how good condition the cards are that they get, how fast they get to them. Sometimes, and this happens with any business, there's a little bit of a snafu where they don't, you know, there's a little mistake made, and Card Kingdom is very, very good about going above and beyond to fix problems when they happen. And I think that's something not enough companies do. You know, you have a bad experience and they just compound it by making it worse. Well, Card Kingdom is known to take care of it very fast, make sure that the person is happy and wants to come back to them again, even after a mistake has been made, which there's no higher praise you can give to a company. So cardkingdom.com/commandzone. And also make sure to check out all the awesome stuff by Ultra Pro. We've been talking about these Black Lotus sleeves, playmats, deck boxes, Black Lotus. I mean, is there a more iconic Magic imagery? In fact, people that don't even know really what Magic is will often know what the Black Lotus is. It just has sort of a cultural icon status. So if you want to have that on your side of the battlefield, Ultra Pro products are the place to find it. Okay, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I'm cheating because you wrote
something
down.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was a present I got recently.
Oh.
Relatively recently. I got it for my anniversary.
Oh.
Yeah. And I want to share it because I've always wanted it, but it's one of those things, you have these things where you like, you want something, but you're like, I'm definitely never going to buy that
right,
for myself.
Right, yeah.
You know? And so my wife kind of picked up on that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
My wife kind of picked up on it and was like, okay, I'm going to get that for you. Okay. So what it is it's an ecosphere.
Ecosphere. Okay.
So what it is it's a completely closed biome. So it's basically a thing of glass that has no ins or outs in terms of air or anything. It's completely solid glass. And inside is like water and algae and little bacteria and little shrimp. And so there's nothing going in and out. It's just a solid.
You can't affect it really?
The only thing that goes in is sunlight. And so the sunlight makes the algae grow and the shrimp eat the algae and fertilize the algae and the algae produces the air for the shrimp. And it's an entire ecosystem that's enclosed in this little thing that sits on your desk.
Wow.
If there aren't any like available cool images online that you're seeing right now, Murph, I'll get you a copy of my own one.
Record some with your phone?
Record some with my
phone. How big are the shrimp
shaky
now?
Shaky image. So one thing that's interesting is that like you have to keep the system relatively, like you can't overheat it. Obviously you can't do that stuff like that.
Don't put it in the microwave.
It actually can't get too much light because that's the only thing that can affect it. So if it gets too little light, the algae goes down and there's enough oxygen for the shrimp. And if there's too much, then it kind of overwhelms the ecosystem, but it's completely closed.
Delicate.
It's a little bit delicate, but it's completely closed. And so you don't have to like feed them or anything like that. And these things last for years. There are ones that they have at universities that are like big, big ones, not just little desk ones. And they've lasted for dozens of years.
Wow. Wow. Ecosphere.
Yeah.
Do you have it on your desk at work?
Yeah. I have it on like a little shelf at work. And literally like, I love it so much. I like look over and I see these little shrimpies just going like and swimming around and eating algae and doing their own little shrimpy world. And I like it a lot. It distracts me and it's very peaceful. But they're a little bit expensive. You can get them on Amazon. You can get them from the website or something like that. But they're not like it's obviously a luxury item. It's like little shrimp that you put on your desk that you have to take care of and like make sure
like
it doesn't apply.
Room decor, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. But it's living room decor. I like it a lot.
All right, I'll Ecosphere. The links will be definitely in the show notes as all of our end steps always are. Oh, this is the Jumbo Commander shout out portion of the show. So, if you go to YouTube and in the search bar, you type in Jumbo Commander, you're going to find DJ's channel. If you didn't know, DJ doesn't just co-host the Command Zone podcast with me. He has his own entire channel on YouTube where he talks about Commander and has tons of deck techs. Also is doing some Singleton Arena videos.
Yeah.
What's your most recent video?
My most recent video at this time will be a Tristani Selesnya's voice. So the guild sets came out and they've the guild kits. Yeah. And they've opened up, you know, people are kind of so-so on the Guilds of Ravnica cards, but they have some really cool reprints. And Tristani is one of them that has amazing art. It has some really good reprints. The value of that deck particularly is great because it has privileged position, I think it is, in that set. So you could literally buy the guild kit, sell privileged position, and then keep all of the cards that can start you off to making a really great commander deck. So a Tristani deck. I also, in weeks past, did an Adelies.
Adelies of the Cinder.
Yeah, the Cinderwind.
Yeah.
Wizard tempo deck that was very fun. So check those deck techs out on my channel.
See, DJ, he knows his stuff. And he also, yeah, you like to talk about some of the financial stuff. You do budget decks or like when to buy things when they're rotating. Yeah,
and like the guild kit thing is kind of part of that where it's like, okay, this is a card that you can very easily sell and recoup a lot of the value and basically jumpstart a commander deck.
So again, Jumbo Commander on YouTube. And while you're there, you can also check out our sister podcast, which is the Masters of Modern. In YouTube, if you just type in the Masters of Modern, they're going to come up. It's Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format, all things competitive Magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast or right next to us at at collected.company. That's the URL, collected.company.
And our editor is Josh Murphy. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living art. What do we have today?
This is, I think, an island from M19.
It's beautiful.
This looks like I'm from Oregon, and it looks a little bit like Haystack Rock.
Nice.
If you're an Oregonian.
Check them out at LivingCardsMTG.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everyone.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.